Welcome to the Strokes and Jokes podcast. I'm here with our special guest, Jake Neen.
So Jake Neen's been playing some professional golf after he graduated Oakland about 2 years ago, I think. And he's just been grinding away on the mini tours, and he's here to tell us about how he got into golf, some of his hobbies off the course, and just how his career has gone so far. So, Jake, how did you get into golf?
Thanks for having me on the podcast, first of all. Appreciate you guys having me. I've listened to a couple of your podcasts and enjoy your stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, as far as me getting into golf, my parents bought me a set of plastic golf clubs when I was 2 years old, and I took them out in the backyard and just started swinging away at it. I've been playing in tournament golf. The first one I ever played in was when I was five. I won my first tournament when I was five.
Wow.
And
I
played other sports growing up, but eventually settled on golf, and here I am today.
So how was it like once you got into high school and you're kind of deciding where to go to college? Like, how was that process, and how did you make your decision?
My first couple years of high school, I didn't really think of playing college golf, but, towards the end of my sophomore year, I think I was like, okay, we'll start looking into this. Just kind of sent an email with a resume to many college coaches and, got on a couple's radars. And, during my junior year of high school, I had some successes, had some solid tournaments, and, it came down to a couple schools, and I chose Oakland, and, I think that pretty much answers that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I actually had a girl in my graduating class, Alexis Jones. She went to Oakland University as well. And she played there for 2 years, and then she transferred. She's going to some school in Arizona now. So that's pretty cool that, small world, with you going to Oakland, with all the success you had there, and me having somebody I played. So how was your experience at Oakland, playing collegiate golf? How was it playing tournaments, the kind of tournaments you guys play in? You guys get to travel a lot and stuff like that?
My experience at Oakland was great. I mean, it was everything I could have dreamt of and more. And, as far as traveling, we got to travel a lot, play all over the country. But my 4 years at Oakland were, each unique because I had three different coaches when I was there.
I remember Connor's
head. Each of my first 3 years was pretty different. And then my last 2 years were great. My last coach, Nick Pumford, I'm very close with him. He's really helped me develop from a good college player, towards, being able to give this pro golf thing a legitimate shot. And I've been able to go to places I would have never been able to go to when I was at Oakland, experience things that I would never have been able to experience anywhere else.
So obviously as a professional golfer, you spend a lot of time on the course and stuff. What are some of the things off the course that you do for fun and just relax a little bit?
I'm a pretty chill guy, but I love to, watch pretty much, any football game that's on, any basketball game that's on. I love being competitive. I love playing ping pong. I love card games.
I respect the ping pong.
Oh, yeah, I played some ferocious games of ping pong.
We've been there.
Yeah, we've been there and done that. We've had some very intense ping pong games, that's for sure.
Where you're just drenched in sweat afterwards.
Julian's been there.
I broke a table.
Oh, yeah. The videos I have of us playing ping pong, I beat him for one of the first times. It was one of the first and only times we ever played, and I beat him, and he got so mad, this dude picked it up and just absolutely snapped it in half. It was unbelievable. Something I've never seen before.
I did.
Wow, that's intense. Uh, I've broken a paddle or two and seen several broken paddles, but a table.
Oh, that wow. was intense. That was
actually, that's a little extreme.
So yeah. We were in the bottom, like the basement of one of the dorms had like a little complex area that we could do that in, and I was just pissed, and he beat me, and he beat me fair and square.
It was an ass whooping, if I may say.
I don't remember that, but so I just like picked up this table and just like put like just full force on the ground and just went snap.
Well, it was kind of easy because it was one of those tables that was like a two-piece, you know, the center, the two pieces come together so it can fold up.
And it just...
I mean, this dude literally picked this table up and just destroyed it. It was amazing.
I just remember running right out of there after we did that. And then, like, 2 weeks later, they got a brand new one.
They sent out, like, an email to everyone.
Yeah. Asking if anybody knows, come forward. If not, it's just going to be a community bill.
It wasn't our residence hall, so we were okay.
Yeah, we were avoiding it. Got lucky. It was not our residence hall, that's for sure.
Where was it?
It was in Neufeld. Which Neufeld is one of the nicer and newer, or the nicest and newest of all the dorms. And the basement's sweet now. It's now an esports club. They've got a bunch of gaming computers and stuff, TV, couches, vending machine. I mean, it's legitimate. But this thing was torn to shreds.
So you said you're a big college football fan. Do you root for anyone in particular? Are you big in college or pro? Or?
I like college and pro. I'd probably say I like college a little more. And since Oakland didn't have a football team, I can still stay loyal to the University of Michigan.
That's what I like to hear. Come on. Because we know Connor's an Ohio State fan. So
facts.
We got some blue and gold out here.
Yeah, Connor and I are very close friends. I would say 51 weeks of the year, and then that 52nd week, you know, we're not friends. You know, we hate each other.
And you know that we know we can.
Well, I definitely don't feel bad for Connor because I definitely don't feel bad for you because Connor seems to probably get the edge on you every year.
College football.
Michigan.
Honestly, it's been pretty rough. You know, it's been pretty rough. You know. Ohio State's been dominating for long enough, you know, hopefully with Urban Meyer leaving. We have a chance this year, but honestly, Michigan looks pretty bad so far.
highly unlikely Michigan gets a W this year.
Double overtime versus Army.
We'll kick Wisconsin's ass next week and go back down to 7.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it at Michigan or Ohio State this year? I don't know.
It's at Michigan.
Because it was at the Shoe last year.
Yeah. Because I remember Carter put, what was it, like $30 on the game that Michigan was going to win?
It doesn't matter where they play at. I mean, hell, they could literally come to my high school and play. Ohio State's going to put that ass whooping on. That's just
conversation. Oh, wow. That's some big talk.
Wow, talking some big game over there.
If you want Ohio State versus Michigan, we would glad to have you back on the show after the game, and
we can have you and Connor.
Oh yeah.
Oh okay.
Be a lot of trash.
That'd be a lot of trash talk, but we can do a post game review.
Oh, we definitely need to do that.
That'd be hilarious.
Carter has his Michigan Wolverine wristband on that he always wears.
Hell yeah!
Always trying to represent.
Wolverines is absolutely terrible. They're terrible.
Wow. No. Well, how do you guys get along?
It's tough.
I don't know.
Carter just thinks Michigan is just absolutely amazing. I mean, they're terrible.
I mean, I don't really pay attention a lot to college football, but I always root for Michigan when they're playing. I'm more of a NFL guy, Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
He likes the Buccaneers.
Doesn't make any sense.
Took the dub on Thursday night.
Doesn't make any sense.
At least you're not a Lions fan like I am.
Yeah, that's a struggle.
It's a curse, you know, of being born and raised not too far from Detroit and being a Lions fan my whole life. It's been very rough having to, you know, witness the 0-16 season and getting your hopes up way too much.
That's my entire family are Lions fans, so I see it through them.
Yeah.
We never asked Connor this, but what was a routine of practice that you guys would do? Like, did you guys have to do like qualifying during the week? What was like a week of practice?
Yeah, at OU. My first 2 years under the coaches, it didn't. We were kind of just left to our own, you know, to practice. You know, they didn't really. They would supervise it, obviously, and give us advice, but like it was ultimately up to us. But you know, my junior senior year, we'd kind of have like block practices where, you know, one day we'd really be like honing in on our, you know, 75 yards an in shot on the short game area. And then like the next day we'd really be like honing in on our putting. And it really to help us get like peaked for tournaments. And, you know, there was qualifying mixed in there, of course. And, you know, to make sure we had the right lineup and everything. And, but yeah, that's kind of what we did. We would kind of focus on one particular thing at practice and make sure we're comfortable with it. And then move on to the next part of the game and kind of just build for tournaments.
So with hearing that, with the two different practice styles, which practice style did you like the most, or which one of those benefited you the most in your college career?
I would say, you know, block practicing, kind of like that, mm-hmm. benefited me the most. And I would say that's kind of, you know, what I do now, because, you know, if you're hitting it fine, you know, 3 or 4 days before an event, you don't need to go spend, you know, in my opinion, you don't need to go hit balls for 5 hours. But, you know, if your putting doesn't feel great, you know, and you only really need to practice your putting, you know, it's not bad to just practice your putting if, you know, everything else is fine. And, you know, playing a lot, I think, is important. And, yeah, pretty much it.
So how is your professional professional career gone so far, and kind of what have you been your successes and your just kind of like not so successes?
Yeah, no, it's definitely been you know, some good, some bad, some ugly. You know, I listened to your podcast with Monday Qualifier Info, and I enjoyed that one a lot because he kind of touched on a lot of the stuff about, you know, how a lot of pro golf is not very glamorous.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't see the struggle as much as you see all the success. But, you know, when it comes to, like, qualifying school, for example, you know, I tried twice for, you know, the Korn Ferry Tour. I tried last year right when I turned pro. And, you know, just this year. And unfortunately haven't done well in that. And I tried McKenzie Tour Q School in the, I believe it was March this year. Didn't get through that either. But, you know, I've won, like, I think, like, 5 or 6 mini-tour events. So, you know, it's been some good and some bad. You know, I tried to Monday qualify a few times and honestly haven't gotten even close to doing that yet. So, I mean, it's been a little bit of everything. You know, it's been a bit of a roller coaster, and it seems like even more so than amateur golf, you know, the highs are higher and the lows are lower. You know, like I went to a pre-qualifier, you know, a couple of weeks ago in South Carolina just to get even get into stage one of Korn Ferry Tour Q School. And it was 54 holes. I missed it by one shot. You know, I played badly, missed it by one. And, you know, I was pretty down about that, but, you know, at the same time, just one tournament. I'll have other opportunities, and it's got to move on and try to focus on the next event.
So for you and the whole, I know we talked with like the Monday Q guy. What was his name again?
Ryan French.
Yeah, Ryan French. Gotta love that guy. He was straight up with us. You know, he talked about, he also, you know, starting with everything he's doing and with his brand, you know, he used to work in the restaurant business and stuff. Is there a job that you work, you know, on the side to help fund your dream and the things that you're trying to pursue in your life?
Not currently. I am just, at the moment, just on the golf grind.
Yeah.
When I turned pro, I formed a business entity and got some investors to invest in me, and I paid them back with a certain percentage of my winnings. And that's how I've been able to front a lot of the costs, because to be frank, and as you guys know, either firsthand or you've heard from a lot of guys, pro golf is really expensive.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And it adds up like crazy because, for example, in a mini tour event, like the standard entry fee is anywhere from, you know, $400 to $1,000. And if you don't finish in the top third of the field, you don't get paid anything. Let's say, you know, there's 90 guys. If you don't finish in the top 30, you don't even get your entry fee back. And these guys at the mini tour level, they're shooting, you know, 62s, 3s, 4s, you know, just as often as anybody else. Of course, you know, the fields probably aren't as deep as, you know, the guys at the highest level, but they're still shooting deep scores and got to, you know, ball out if you want to even get any money back, much less make a living, which you can't really do on many tours.
We asked Connor this back in his interview. What's in the bag?
Oh, yeah. I have a bit of a mixed bag right now. I have a Callaway Rogue driver. I have a TaylorMade M2 3-wood, which is kind of a trusty old one. I have a Callaway Apex Hybrid. I have Strix on iron.
Yep, that's what I like to hear right there.
Oh, yeah, I've had them for just over 2 years. I forget which one of you has a connection to Strixon.
That's me. It's my uncle. He's a sales rep, Nathan Highfield.
Okay, yeah.
Do you know who Nathan Highfield is? Do you know who that is?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know him, no.
That is my uncle. He's out of, I think, DeWitt or East Lansing. I don't know if those two are close. I think DeWitt and East, are those close?
Yeah, they're close.
Yeah, I think he lives in either DeWitt or East Lansing, and he sells clubs to the Michigan State golf team. But yeah, I love Strixon irons. You know, with the whole Strixon thing, it's just so, everyone just downplays them, and they're quality. I'm telling you what, they're quality. They really are.
Yeah, they're good. I mean, you see them quite a lot. I mean, they seem to be gaining more popularity. And the rest of my bag, I have Vokey wedges and an Odyssey putter. I play a Pro V1, and I think that pretty much, you know, fills out the bag. You know, I kind of have a little bit of everything in there. Right now I'm obviously not, you know, under any equipment contract to be playing a certain brand, so I just kind of have whatever kind of works for me right now.
Yeah, I respect that completely. You know, you just got to hit what you're used to, and you got to hit what's comfortable, and you got to hit what you think is going to give you the best chance to ball out, like you said, in those tournaments.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
What kind of plans do you have for the future?
I will be playing in the Toledo Open in the very near future. It starts on Monday. There's that. I will be going down to Florida. I was fortunate enough last winter to spend it in Florida, playing in a bunch of mini tour stuff down there and trying to get ready for Mackenzie Tour Hugh School, which is in March. And then, you know, basically just working towards that. And then probably coming back up here, you know, early spring. You know, trying to probably qualify for the Rocky Mortgage Classic again, like I did this year, and kind of go with the flow and just see how it goes.
If you need a caddy for that qualifier,
I'd love to do it.
Oh yeah,
I love it.
Well, I will probably hit you up then and do that.
Sounds good.
Honestly, I mean, having a caddy helps. This year, I didn't have a caddy and I didn't play well, but yeah, I mean, we'll have to do that.
Yeah, I'm sure at the end of the interview, Carter will give you either someone's information if anybody's available.
Yeah,
if you ever need one, you know, it's good to have somebody who's played in tournaments and knows a lot about stuff like that to help you caddy and everything.
Yeah, same for you both, you and Connor too.
Yeah, if Connor needs a caddy, we'll definitely have to hit him up.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. Yeah, we'll definitely have to do that, and even if you know, we can't for that one, we'll figure something out.
I mean, because we plan on going back. We went to the Rocket Mortgage this past spring, so I know we plan on going back in the upcoming spring again. So.
Yeah, I went there one day, and it was pretty sweet to see, you know, Detroit Golf Club, and I don't know how much you guys had seen of it, if at all, before, you know, they renovated it a little bit before that tournament. And it was pretty sweet seeing the grandstands up and, you know, a bunch of top players being there and being right in the, you know, city limits of Detroit. I think it's great.
Yeah, I remember, because I've been following you on Twitter on my personal account for a little bit, just watching how yours and Connor's career has been going, kind of. And I remember you guys posting something about you guys playing there when they were building the bleachers and stuff.
Yeah, funny story about that. So if you go back and look at that tweet, I tweeted a video of me hitting on 18 because I kind of had like the skeleton of the grandstands up, and I tweeted, you know, oh, it's cool to see Detroit Golf Club getting ready for the Rocket Mortgage Classic, and Connor goes, copies my tweet, pastes it, and posts the swing video. He literally did the exact same thing. And I texted him, like, really, dude? Why you gotta troll me like that? And he was like, oh, I'm just seeing if anyone notices. And we didn't tell anybody, and nobody said a single thing. But, you know, now the secret's out. You know, he definitely copied and pasted what I said, which I think is, you know, typical Connor Jones silly, you know, BS. But
trying to steal a spotlight.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
So with you and Connor playing in the Toledo, was it Toledo Open or whatever?
Yeah.
The Toledo Open, is it kind of cool to compete against when you're buddies? And do you think that you were going to put a spanking on him?
Now, that's a very good question. To address the first part of your question, you know, Connor and I have been playing in tournaments against each other for – we played in – I can't remember if he mentioned this in his interview, but we played in a playoff together when we were 8 years old.
Really? Did not say this.
Who won?
In a Meyer Junior Players Tour event, and we shot 41 on a 9-hole thing, and it was me, him, and a third player, Logan. And it's just par 4, and you can see probably, can't remember the exact numbers, but you can probably see like 100 yards of the fairway. It goes uphill. And the rest hole is downhill. So I hit my drive, and I couldn't clear the hill when I was 8 years old. I couldn't get it over the hill. And Connor, like, he's been just a huge dude his whole life. He's always hit it forever, his whole life. He cleared the hill by, I don't know, 50 yards. He outdrove me by, like, 60 yards. So, I mean, he was probably 60 yards ahead of me. He ended up winning. So, you know, he was 1-0 in that respect. I've gotten the best of him. He's gotten the best of me. You know, he's gone back and forth. We've both had successes and everything. So it's nothing new to be competing against him, but it is fun. We're playing a practice round together on Sunday, and I'm sure there'll be some trash talking there. And am I going to whoop him? Yes, I am.
I like to hear that. You got to put the whoop ass on him.
Yeah, exactly.
I really hope you do too. I'm rooting for you.
I mean, I'm just playing, but you know, of course, you know, if you're asking me about him, I gotta trash talk as much as possible.
Oh, for sure.
Gotta have that competitiveness.
The mental advantage right there.
Yeah, just Brooks Koepka him. Yeah.
So we talked about a couple podcasts ago about 36 holes and how much is too much golf. For someone like yourself who plays a lot on the mini tours and everything, how much is too much golf for you?
When it comes to what?
So just like consistently, like playing rounds, like how often do you take breaks, like just like a couple days off from going to the course, or, you know, instead of, you know, after you played 4 rounds of 18 or whatever, do you take breaks, take days off and stuff like that?
Yeah. When you're at, you know, my level right now, which is having no status anywhere, your schedule isn't as regular as like okay, Thursdays or Sunday, you're just kind of playing in, you know, an 18-hole event on Tuesday, then, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it's a 54-hole event, and then you might have 3 weeks between an event and everything, but, you know, I think that one thing I need to improve on is resting more, because I think I kind of can, you know, over-practice myself a little too much to where I'm not resting enough between tournaments. But, yeah, I think rest is just as important as preparation, because you don't want to burn yourself out. You know, if you have 2 weeks until your next event, you don't need to be grinding on the range for 8 hours. But at the same time, you need to get your game ready. So you just need a balance, really, is, you know, long story short, you just need balance between rest and preparation and, you know, trying to play your best.
Back when you were in college, did you guys ever play 36 hole in one day tournaments?
Oh, yeah, almost every single one was.
Oh, really?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
we're a bunch of sissies. God, we hate them.
If anyone just saw the look on Spencer's face, he about cried right there.
Well, to us, I don't know. We hate doing these 36-holers, and it burns us out, and all we do is complain about them. And I kind of feel like a sissy now that you're saying you guys did that all the time.
No, I mean, I would say probably 90% of, you know, Division One college golf tournaments are 36-18. You know, so they're 54 hole events in 2 days. So, and they never really, the 36 hole days don't really get that much easier. You just kind of get used to them because, I mean, you are on the course for, you know, a lot of times it's a shotgun start at, you know, let's say 8, and you're getting off the course when it's dark.
Yeah.
So it's a grind. It really is. But I remember my first college tournament was at Barrington in Ohio. I don't know if you guys have played there ever, but I started on 8. And, you know, I walked my first 18, and I'm finished with 7. And, you know, I was a freshman, first tournament. And I go start walking back to the clubhouse, and the guys in my group are like, "Where are you going?" I'm like, "Oh, well, isn't there like a break in between the two rounds or anything?" Like, no, like you just keep going. So it's weird. College golf is weird because, I mean, you just play, it's like you shotgun start like a 36 hole round, you know, it's not like an 18 hole round break, 18 hole round. You know, like for a USAM qualifier or something like that. So, yeah, the 36 hole days are a grind, but it doesn't get you tough, and it gets you in good shape, that's for sure.
Yeah, so the last podcast we did, we kind of talked about the Player of the Year and how Rory won Player of the Year. Congratulations to Rory. And a lot of people think Brooks Koepka got snubbed. What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, do you guys see my tweet about it?
No, we did not.
I actually tweeted about it because I think that Brooks definitely should have won. I mean, he got top 4 at every major, including a win and 2 runner-ups. He won a WGC event, and he won the CJ Cup in Korea.
Yeah.
So you put that against Rory, who missed a cut at the Open. He, as far as I remember, wasn't in contention at any major, was he?
He finished
like third?
Ninth.
No,
he finished tied for ninth at the PGA.
Yeah, at the PGA.
And then he finished tied for 21st at the Masters, didn't make the cut at the Open, and the U.S. Open.
I don't think he was really in contention.
He wasn't in contention at all.
But he did win the Players.
He did win the Players, which is the 5th major.
It's a 5th major that's not a major, but
yeah, I know.
I mean, it's the biggest tournament outside of the majors, but,
yeah,
you know, of course, anybody, you know, I think, you know, would trade years with Rory, but, I mean, if you ask Brooks to, you know, trade years with Rory, he would say, no, I'm just fine. I'm fine with, you know, having the chance to win 2 majors, winning another one. And, I mean, he won, like, Rory won the FedEx Cup, and he won, you know,
a lot of money.
A lot of money.
A lot of money. He won the Canadian Open,
to be exact.
Well, this year, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like those guys, any of those guys are hurting for money. You know
no.
what I mean?
Yeah.
You
know, no.
Yeah.
I definitely think I'm 100%. Listen, I love Rory, but when it comes to this, I can't agree with, you know, because the players voted. The
yeah.
players vote for it, which is strange. I don't know if it's like a popularity contest or what it is, but. I would definitely have voted for Brooks 100% of the time.
I think Bryson definitely voted for Rory.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then a few other guys, you know, he ripped for slow play. But what do you guys think? You guys all agree or no?
Well, in the podcast we did earlier today, we really focused on it. And I think Rory should have won, which I'm glad he did. Just looking at his year and a lot of his stats, I mean, he was first in a lot of strokes gained. He was actually better than Brooks in every single category except for one, and I think it was approach to the green.
Yeah,
I think he was actually one or two just behind Brooks. So you got to think about, you know, I kind of took all that in consideration. I mean, he won just as many tournaments. I think he had five or six more top tens than Brooks did.
Five.
He had five more top tens than Brooks and two less starts. So I kind of took that in consideration as well. And you know, obviously he was FedEx number one after the players, so I kind of think Rory won, but I definitely can see your side. I'm not saying you're wrong because you're 100% right. Brooks had an amazing year. You know, he finished second in so many majors, won a major. I mean, he had a fantastic year. I just think looking at all the stats, you know, the little nitty gritty stats behind the scenes, I think is what kind of pushed it over the edge for Rory to win it for me.
For me, I think it just goes to whether or not you how high you weigh like the majors and how much they mean. And that's just all opinion based, and
yeah, totally.
And I think Brooks, I think they both deserve it, but I think just with Brooks' performances in all four majors, winning a WGC event, and then the CJ Cup in overseas, it's hard to not calculate that into a Player of the Year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that, you know, majors are more important, but you know, if you know, Rory had an incredible year, like you guys were saying, so it's tough to beat.
Yeah, it's one of those things, kind of like in 2017. If you look at the stats between LeBron James and James Harden in the NBA, I mean, LeBron was just, he had more points, more rebounds, more assists, more steals, more blocks, but James Harden still won the MVP for some unknown reason. So I mean,
right? Yeah, I saw a tweet about that earlier.
Yeah,
it
was probably the same tweet I was looking at. It kind of showed their stats through the year and everything. And LeBron has had such a great year, but someone else won the MVP, and it's just something that you can't control. It's all based off of voting, and you know, people are going to have their opinion. It's just because James Harden has had that ungodly year where he had 33 points a game or whatever. But I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. So,
right.
But yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that could be talked about, you know, some more about the whole Player of the Year voting and whether or not it should be players or whether or not it should be past players or if they should have a committee that should vote on that. Because I feel like if there was different insights to voting, the outcome would probably be different.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, if you look at like the world ranking right now, which I did, I don't know, yesterday or the day before. I mean, Brooks is number one in the world by a lot.
Yeah.
Like,
it is a lot.
It's not even close. I mean, he is way ahead. So, I mean, if you go by that, you know, I don't know. I mean, it does include the previous year, sure. So, but I mean, I'm on Brooks' side here, and I'm not going to be convinced otherwise. But I see how people can do it. I mean, I think the LPGA does like a point system, you know, for the Player of the Year. So
that would make sense.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense.
Because I think it should be an unbiased thing.
Because
Brooks Koepka probably got a little bit of a bad rep from like saying,
and it's only because he's straightforward and he has the nutsack to say what he believes, and I respect that.
He's like, you know,
I mean, he is kind of. It's easy to see that Brooks can be perceived as a jerk.
Yeah.
He's very brash and, like, almost too honest sometimes. You know, it almost seems like he doesn't even like golf sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's number one in the world in golf, so it's kind of weird.
It is.
Well, a couple podcasts ago, we were talking about like it's the same thing we mentioned, how much golf is too much, and it was an interview he did with four player Barstool Sports, which is, you know, same thing, affiliated, but he was saying that, you know, after 13 or 14 holes, it just needs to be done. He said he doesn't want to play anymore. He said he wants to get to the 19th hole as quick as possible. He wants to get to the bars and
he wants to get his 3 hours of playing and go home, take his money with him, and be done with it.
Yeah, he's tired of playing the next 10 holes.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're going to have any golf tournaments with less than 18 hole rounds anytime soon. Yeah. Okay. What do I know?
I guess we're going to wrap this up, but the final question is, with, like, the PGA Tour, you're looking at it, they don't really have, like, a set off season. Like, obviously, they're starting a new season, and it's, like, what, a one-week or two-week break? Yeah. It's not much. What do you think about that? Like, you think they should change it into a more traditional off season like the other professional sports?
That's an interesting question. I don't know, because you look at the season the way it is now, and like a lot of guys at the Greenbrier right now are guys that just came off the Korn Ferry Tour and are finally getting their shot. And, you know, if they, like, everything's still at stake, you know, they still get, you know, $1 million+ for a win, and, you know, FedEx Cup points, and, you know, invite to the majors and all that fun stuff. But I think the majors were too close to each other, which I don't really know how they could solve that, because they're trying to end the season before football, like end the playoff season before football. But I mean, you think of it as like the Open Championship ended in mid-July, and then the next major isn't for 9 months until April, which seemed kind of weird, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like maybe if it's just this way for a couple of years, everyone will just get used to it, but it is kind of strange. You know, I don't think they'll ever really have a long off season, because if the money's there and the sponsors are there for all the tournaments, they're not going to want to forfeit those tournaments.
Yeah.
The guys that are trying to work their way up from the Korn Ferry Tour and establish themselves on the PGA Tour, I think they're still going to want their shot. So, yeah.
I guess, like, talking about, like, how the four majors were close together, I guess that schedule will work for this upcoming year, because, like, the Olympics will be in August and everything. But I just don't think it's been a realistic schedule for, like, the seasons where there is no Olympics.
Like how this year played out, you mean?
Yeah, because it's just too compact, and it doesn't really give a lot of the PGA players, not necessarily a break, but, like, they're almost playing every week. And, like, obviously Tiger, you saw, he was only playing, like, once a month after the Masters.
Right, and I feel like you could see even more top guys doing what Tiger's doing, because, you know, what's the point in playing in, you know, tournaments in between majors when they're 3 weeks apart, and you need to be, you know, the most rested and prepared for those. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how it changes, because it's changed a lot in the last couple of years. So who knows where it's going to go from here.
All right, well, we appreciate talking to you. I can't thank you enough for coming on and giving us your input and insight about how you got into golf and your college process and how college was and now your professional career.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, and I hope to maybe be back on again. I enjoy your guys' podcast, and I wish you guys the best. And, thanks again.
Thank you so much, Jake. As we wrap this up, you guys keep stroking and joking, and we'll do the same.